Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
It seems like it's a truth of the business world that people hate meetings. But I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think we just hate bad meetings.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without losing your soul or your mind in the process.
Bad meetings are those soul-sucking, horrible wastes of time. The minutes creep along. The leader wastes everybody's time. People have meaningless conversations. They don't solve problems. Everyone's frustrated that they could be doing something more productive. Those are the kind of meetings we hate. But I think that we actually like and appreciate good meetings that are a productive use of time, that benefit everyone that's there, that move the business and the team forward and help us build better relationships and get better results. Those are the kind of meetings we like attending. And I'm sure that you've been in the soul-sucking variety. The real question is, and I want you to be honest, what are your meetings like? Do you regularly end your meeting and people say something like, "Wow, that was a great meeting," and they feel energized, and they're walking out, good conversation, good dialogue, and ready to take on the next thing? If you're not seeing and hearing those things regularly, the next couple of tips I'm going to share will help you to make meetings work for you and for your team, ultimately so that you can lead meetings that get results and that people want to attend. So let's start with a framework, a paradigm, a perspective about time. One of the reasons that so many people hate meetings is that they abuse our most precious resource, our time. You can always make another dollar, you can always make another friend, as the old motivational speaker said, but you can never make another minute. Effective leaders treat people's time as the precious resource that it is. When you value someone's time, you're showing one of the greatest signs of respect for another human being, particularly in Western cultures. And it can be different in other cultures, but in Western cultures, that is frequently the case. But when you carelessly let meetings run long or start late, you're disrespecting your people. So here's the first thing you can do to make meetings work for you and your team. Only hold meetings when they are the most valuable use of all the attendees' time. Now, sometimes I will share that and a manager will say, "Come on, David, the most valuable use of their time?" Absolutely. I mean, think about it. As a leader, why would you want somebody doing anything less than being as productive as they could be? So if that meeting's not going to help them or the team be more productive overall, why on earth would you want them there? It gets to the heart of things. So it's a high standard, but it will help you to stop wasting your team's time. So how do you know if a meeting is going to be a good use of time? Let's get back to the fundamental model that we share in Winning Well: results and relationships. Don't hold a meeting unless it's going to serve one or both of those purposes. Is it going to build relationships, help people establish trust, time spent together through solving problems, making decisions together, learning how each other operate, how they see the world, getting the information they need? Meetings should help you build relationships with everybody who attends. And the second reason to hold a meeting is to achieve results. Move the mission of the team, the organization forward. Ultimately, meetings should produce action. You're meeting to solve a problem, make a decision, share information, and now it's time to do something. If your meetings don't produce results in terms of clear actions, you've wasted your time. Relationships and results. Okay, so you've made sure that your meeting is going to be a productive use of time. It's going to build results. It's going to help build relationships. Now let's get the right people in the meeting. So who should attend your meeting? The basic guideline here is that you want the smallest number of people that will allow you to make the best decision. So think about the number of people that you could invite to a meeting as a continuum. On the low end, you could just meet by yourself, make a decision. Of course, you wouldn't have input, you wouldn't have buy-in, and no one would know what happened. On the other end of the spectrum, you could have every single person in the company in that meeting. And obviously, that would be, for most things, way too many people and not effective. So the question is, what's the least number of people who can attend, but where you'll still have a good, diverse, and informed set of input from people who have a stake in the decision? Where a lot of leaders go wrong here is that they'll invite too many people who share the same perspective, and they don't invite key representatives with different perspectives who might help them make a better decision. Wrigley, Wrigley chewing gum fame, Wrigley Field, so forth, that Wrigley said, in business, if two people agree, one of them is unnecessary. So if the goal of the meeting is to produce great results and to take action, and you're going to take people away from their work, you want to make sure that you're making the best decision that you can in that meeting. To do that, you've got to have the right people in the room. All of the perspectives that need to be represented should be there. All right, now let's get to the meeting agenda. What kind of meeting is this? There are three common types of meetings that you see in business all the time. You've got your information meeting, where you're just trying to distribute information or have people exchange information. You've got your problem-solving or decision-making meeting. And finally, you've got a strategy meeting. The information meeting is usually one of two things. Either it's something that the leader is doing because it's convenient for them. They want to get information out and they get everybody together to do that. If you're doing that, you want to keep that as short as you can and make sure you've got some good interaction and dialogue going. Make it an opportunity for people to engage and ask questions and really get some good information and feedback. Otherwise, again, it's not the most productive use of their time. You've done it because it was convenient for you. The other kind of information meeting that you'll often see are stand-up meetings, and those are very short, and they call them stand-up meetings because frequently they'll do them standing up because that keeps everybody pretty concise, and you're just taking a few seconds to share with what you're working on, what you're doing, do you need any input from anybody else, with the goal of once everybody is informed about what's happening, you can interject, you can have some conversation afterwards and get each other what you need. Either way, those information meetings should involve interaction with one another, with you, and they should be kept as short as possible. The next kind of meeting, and where we're going to spend most of our time, because this is actually the most common type, is the problem-solving or decision-making meeting. These are the majority of business meetings, or at least they should be, anywhere from 15 to an hour and a half long, that kind of thing. And you're trying to make a decision. You're trying to answer a problem, solve a problem. If you're doing a problem-solving or decision-making meeting, you want to be clear about what success looks like. What is the problem you're trying to solve? Specifically, there are usually two kinds of decisions that you should be making in a business meeting, and only two. And if you're doing anything else, it's probably not productive to be doing it in a meeting. The two kinds of decisions you want to focus on are, where are we going? And how are we going to get there? So think about if you're making a decision as a family about vacation. First, you decide, where are we going? Are we going to go to, Las Vegas and do some gambling and see some shows? Are we going to go to France and enjoy the culture and see all the Eiffel Tower and all the history there? Or are we going to stay at home and camp in our backyard and save some money? So those are all where are we going types of questions. And until we know where we're going, we can't really answer how we're going to get there. Once you know where we're going, then we have the how are we going to get there discussion. So let's say we decided to go to Las Vegas. Now the question is, how are we going to get there? Will we take a train? Will we drive? Will we fly? or some combination. But what happens in a lot of meetings, and we see this all the time, and it's one of the things that makes meetings a soul-sucking waste of time, is that we'll allow the discussion to get mixed. One minute we're talking about where are we going, the next minute we start talking about how we're going to get there. You know, imagine if you're sitting there having the discussion about, well, do we want to go to Las Vegas or do we want to go to Paris? And somebody says, well, I hate airplanes. That confuses the subject and you can't really have a discussion because there are different ways. You don't have to take an airplane to get to either destination. But if you allow the discussion to start happening around airplanes and how we're going to get wherever we're going, now you've got an ambiguous, unclear conversation. And if you've ever seen a meeting where people are leaning back in their chairs and just kind of lobbing grenades into the conversation, verbal grenades periodically, but people are pretty disengaged, start here. Is it clear? Have you mixed the conversation about where you're going versus how you're going to get there? This is the first place I'll look when that's happening. So be clear. Where are we going? How are we going to get there? The next thing we want to share is something else that happens at the beginning of the meeting. Now, in your agenda, you may have shared where are we going or how are we going to get there. If you haven't made that clear as to the purpose of the meeting and what the agenda question is, where are we going, how are we going to get there, you definitely want to do that at the beginning of the meeting. The next thing you want to do at the beginning of the meeting is answer, who owns the decision? And this is the second reason that I see meetings derail badly. People lean back, they disengage, and everyone's frustrated. But if you can clarify this, it will really help your people and help your meetings to be more productive. Who owns the decision? Now, there are only four ways a group of people can make a decision. And so if you'll keep this in mind and choose one of them up front, it's going to make everything easier. What are the four ways? First, a single person can make the decision. Often that's the leader of the meeting. Not always, but most of the time. Second is the team can vote. It may be majority rules. It may be something has to get more than 50%, but some kind of vote. Number three is the team decides through consensus. And consensus is basically where everyone can live with one choice. May not be everybody's favorite choice, but if they can, everybody can live with it, you've got consensus. Finally, number four, you let fate decide. You flip a coin, you draw straws, draw something out of a hat. Obviously, you're almost never going to use number four. Where you would use it in a business setting is where the consequences are very, very low. Both outcomes are pretty much equivalent, and it's not worth wasting any more time on the decision. You know, if you've got 30 minutes to go to lunch and you have two hamburger places across the street from each other, you don't need a consensus decision-making process about that. Flip a coin and go. So right now, I'm not so concerned about which method you're using. All of them are valid. You can decide, the team can vote, you can use consensus. There are appropriate places for all of those. What matters is that you are clear up front about how the decision will be made before there is any discussion. This empowers your people. Now they know how to engage, how to share their information, how to think about the outcome. You use different mental muscles when you're persuading than when you're evaluating information. So if I know that I need to persuade you as the leader, and that's all I need to do, then that's what I'll do. If I know I need to be persuading my colleagues and then also evaluating the information and deciding which option I want to vote for, now I know I'll be doing that. You'll get the best from your team when you let them know upfront which mental muscles they need to engage. Be clear about how the decision will be made, who owns it. So now we are into the meeting. And one of the things that makes meetings a soul-sucking waste of time is where we lose focus. So you want to make this the most productive use of everybody's time? Keep the meeting on track. And inevitably, you will have people who will take you down distractions. You're talking about your compliance strategy, and they want to bring up a customer service question. It's not that their question isn't important. It's that it's not pertinent to the discussion you're having now, and it's not going to help you make a good decision most of the time. If that's the case, you want to use a parking lot. One time I shared the parking lot strategy with a CEO, and we were meeting with the executive team, and they were talking about keeping their meetings on track and so forth. And as we were working through it, I shared the parking lot, and the CEO immediately responded and said, "Oh my goodness, I hate the parking lot. That's where my ideas go to die." And I had to laugh, because that use of the parking lot is a little bit like in Congress when they table a bill in the U.S. Congress. That means it's dead. It's not going anywhere. It's not like it's set on the table to be brought back later. It's dead. That's not what you want to do with a parking lot. It's not where ideas go to die. So how do we do this, but keep everybody still on track and focused? Basically, to use a parking lot, if you're not familiar with the concept, when a distraction or an idea that's not on topic comes up, you say, "Hey, that's an important question. It's not pertinent. We've got, you know, 10, 12 minutes to make this decision right now. So let's put that in the parking lot." It gets written down on a whiteboard or a piece of paper or in the meeting notes, wherever. And the next step is key. Someone's got to be responsible for that idea. And so usually it's going to be the person who brought up the idea, but not always. Sometimes somebody else will go, "Oh, that is an important idea. Let me take responsibility for that one." So you write down that person's name next to the idea, and they are responsible for making sure that it's brought up in the right place and right time. Should it be on the agenda of the next meeting? Should it happen in a conversation outside of the meeting? Whatever that process is, they're responsible for making sure that it happens. So when you're using a parking lot, enhance it by assigning responsibility for each idea. Somebody owns it and is responsible for it. And then you can even review them, at the next meeting or once a month to make sure that the follow-up has happened. So finally, you have had a good meeting. You made sure it was a productive use of people's time. You built relationships. You achieved results. You had the right people there. Fewest number to make the best decision. You were clear about, is this where are we going, or how are we going to get there? You were clear up front about who owns the decision. You stayed focused. You parking lotted those other ideas, parked them. You get to the end of the meeting, and now it's so critical that you don't let this great discussion and these great decisions evaporate. And to do this, you use what we call a magic meeting formula. Every meeting where action is supposed to take place as a result of the meeting, end with this formula. Who is doing what, by when, and how will we know? Who should be pretty clear. There's always a specific person doing something. If everybody's doing it, nobody's doing it. Specific person doing something. What is it that they're doing? When are they going to do it? Pretty straightforward. Who, what, when? The critical component here, and the one that most managers leave out, is how will we know? What you're doing here is baking accountability into the action, into the decision that was just made. At the end of the meeting, who's doing what, by when? The how will we know step is how will that information be passed along, or how will the next person know that the task was completed, or will it come back to the team? There are lots of different ways that this can happen. So let's say that the end of the meeting, we decided that our three vice presidents are going to call our three largest customers, and they're going to ask them these three questions. They're going to get all that information, and they're going to send it to Wendy by Friday at 5 p.m. Then by the following Wednesday, Wendy is going to take all that information, synthesize it, and send out a new process to everybody on the team. Well, now we know who is doing what. First, who is the three vice presidents? What are they doing? They're calling our largest customers. Who, Wendy, is going to do what? She's going to take all that information and she's going to synthesize it. The by when? Well, the vice presidents by Friday, 5 p.m. are going to get that information and the calls made and get that information to Wendy. The by when? Wendy, by Wednesday, is going to synthesize it and get it out to us. Now, the how are we going to know is built in. Wendy is going to know by 5 p.m. if she has that information or not. If she doesn't, she'll pick up the phone and call and get it sorted out. By 5 p.m. Wednesday, the whole team will know if the action was taken, because they'll have the new process from Wendy. Who is doing what, by when, and how will we know? What is the feedback mechanism? How is that loop going to be closed? If you can include the how will we know at the end of every meeting, you will see the results and the actions taken from your meeting skyrocket. It's amazing the accountability that happens when we all have agreed this is what's going to happen, and this is how we will know it has happened. The implied message is, if it hasn't happened, then we will hold one another accountable. And we'll talk about how to do that in a future episode. I promise you that if you will follow these steps, your meetings will become productive. They will be meetings that work for you, for your team. They'll build relationships. They'll achieve results. And now it's time to answer your questions. I love answering questions, and I would love to answer your management or leadership-related question. You can send it to me one of two ways. You can email it, david.dye@letsgrowleaders.com, or you can head over to leadershipwithoutlosingyoursoul.com. You'll see an orange button. You can click that button and tell me your name, where you're from, and you can record your question, and then we can use it in a future episode. Today's question comes from Carl. And Carl's question is a follow-up from last week's delegation episode. Hey, David. The three steps for delegating made a lot of sense, but my question is about routine tasks. If the work is routine, do I need to do these three delegation steps? The idea of having a meeting to receive back every aspect of their work that they're doing seems really cumbersome and not realistic. Hope you can help. All right, Carl, appreciate the question, and you're absolutely right. If a task is routine, if it's just a part of somebody's job, that's not delegation. Delegation are the one-offs, the things that aren't happening regularly that we're asking people to do. Ultimately, where it's still our responsibility, and we're sharing that responsibility with the team member. A person's routine work, the things that they're doing every day or every week or even every month, that's just part of their job description. And yes, we're still going to train them. We're still going to make sure that they know how to do it effectively, that they have all the tools they need, and they're able to think about it critically, and that they're doing it, right? And we're encouraging that, just like we would with anything else. But we're not having the full delegation process where we're having that meeting. And that meeting step is really about evaluating what was done and ensuring that something that could otherwise be ignored isn't. And not ignored because the other person is a bad person, just ignored because there's so many different things happening and it's easy to get distracted. So how do we keep focused? Well, we have a time and place where we're going to make sure and receive it back. That's not the case for routine tasks. Carl, thanks again for the question. And if you know a leader or a manager who could really benefit from these tips, share the podcast with them. Send them over to leadershipwithoutlosingyoursoul.com, and they can subscribe or listen there. Thank you for listening today. And remember, make your meetings the most productive use of time for everyone who attends them. Be clear about what are you doing, or is this a where are we going, or a how are we going to get there question. Who owns that decision? Make sure the meeting produces action by using that who's doing what by when and how will we know. Until next time, be the leader you want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.